Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming. This is, well, it may not be the last session. We'll see how we go. So we're in Split. This is August the 30th, the Ekadasi. And we're going on with the prasadam. Yesterday, I think we finished up where we were talking about non-devotees or uninitiated devotees cooking for the deities. Prabhupada said that one should not do that. So now we'll look at Srila Prabhupada himself taking prasadam and cooking for Prabhupada. So I noted that in general Srila Prabhupada liked to eat prasadam by himself in a kind of quiet, peaceful atmosphere, not disturbed, and Srila Prabhupada would eat very slowly and deliberately because his digestion when I was with him was not good. So it's not like, you know, he was eating huge amounts, but even the small amount that he did eat, he would eat very slowly and very carefully. And with Prabhupada you could see that it was very much a case of prasad seva, serving prasadam, rather than jiva seva, serving the tongue, which is generally our situation. We sit down and we like to eat, but Prabhupada was eating very particularly. So I had one experience of Prabhupada's preference of eating by himself. About a month after I joined his party, we were in Sanand in Gujarat. This is this small town where Prabhupada had gone to do these Pandal programs. We were staying in the King's Palace, and on the 29th of December, it was lunchtime. Although our hosts are cooking for us, Hari Kesh still prepares Srila Prabhupada's meals. In this way, Prabhupada can maintain a regular diet suited to his own taste and delicate digestion. He likes to eat alone and rarely allows anyone to remain with him while he honors his prasadam, as I found out this afternoon. Srila Prabhupada sat down after taking his bath, and I brought in his plate. He began to eat, and so I sat obediently in front, eager to serve him. I thought myself very privileged to share the intimacy of Srila Prabhupada taking his lunch. Srila Prabhupada, however, looked up from his plate and raised his eyebrows, questioning why I was there. He clearly felt the intrusion, and slightly embarrassed, I left. I could understand that he likes us to do things with reason and purpose and not simply hang around. So Prabhupada was eating and then he saw me sitting, just looking at him. So yes. I have to go. So that was generally the situation. Prabhupada liked to eat by himself. But there were occasions, of course, when he did eat with others. Sometimes at programs, when there were a lot of devotees and then everybody would be invited to eat, then Prabhupada would sometimes eat with the devotees. Not very often, but sometimes. And individually also, sometimes somebody would arrive just at the time when Prabhupada was eating, and then he would invite them to eat with him. So there were a few occasions like that. On January the 17th, 1976, Prabhupada was going from Calcutta to Mayapur. And as he usually did when he was traveling, especially in India, from one temple to another, then he set off fairly early in the morning. So after a walk in the nearby park, Srila Prabhupada set off for Mayapur at about 7:30 a.m. With Srila Prabhupada, Madhadvisa Swami, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Jayapataka Swami were all in the lead car. Sridhar Swami, Hari Kesh, Chaitya Guru, who has come from Bombay to associate with Srila Prabhupada, and myself followed in a second car. 2 hours later, and 7 kilometers before the town of Ranagat, our party stopped to take breakfast in a large grove of several hundred mango trees. The grove has become a regular resting point for Srila Prabhupada whenever he travels to Mayapur. Seated on a folded chadar on the leaf-strewn grass, with the spreading arms of the huge trees forming a pleasant canopy above, Prabhupada seemed completely at ease in the natural setting. We had brought various fruits, butter, fried cashew nuts, and sweets. The sannyasi sat in a row alongside his divine grace, while Chaitaguru and I served out the prasadam on leaf plates. After a relaxed half hour, hands and mouths washed, we proceeded on to our destination, the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was a nice pastime, traveling to Mayapur with Prabhupada and having a picnic in this mango grove. In those days it was very beautiful, nice huge trees and just leaves and grass everywhere, sit down and just in a very pleasant atmosphere, enjoy some Krishna prasadam, and then go on with the journey to Mayapur. Nowadays, unfortunately, just actually within the last couple of years, unfortunately, that land was sold that the trees were on. About two-thirds of the forest was chopped down and completely has disappeared, and they put a petrol station there. And then at the side of where the remaining small portion is, the remaining portion was actually purchased by one of our devotees, and he had an idea that he'll preserve that little bit and then put some kind of like a little restaurant there, prasadam restaurant, with pictures of Srila Prabhupada taking his meals in that mango grove. There are about 7 or 8 pictures from different years. And actually this year in Mayapur at the festival, he had a huge banner made about 20 meters long with these pictures blown up, very large size, all in a row, and he put those up at the side of the temple. But unfortunately at the moment, just behind that remaining plot of land with the trees on it, there's I don't know exactly what it is, it's like a gravel factory. You know, all the small stones that they use for mixing with the tar that they put on the roads. So they've got this thing there, it's like a factory, and it pumps out all this thick black smoke, and they've dumped all these big heaps of gravel all over the area where the trees are. So the whole area looks like completely Kali Yuga now. It looks like a, you know, hellish scene. So it went from being this beautiful, idyllic, natural setting to, you know, this whole Kali Yuga enterprise. It's very unfortunate. But anyway, that's progress. So another time when we were traveling in just from Calcutta in 1977, Prabhupada had been invited to visit Panihati, which is on the banks of the Ganges. It's the place where Raghava Pandit used to live. And the devotees would come from West Bengal, they would come to Panihati, and then from there they would go over the Ganga and they would go down into Orissa and spend 4 months of the year with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri celebrating the Rathiyatra festival. So Panihati of course is the place where not only Raghava Pandit was there, but there was this Chiradayi festival where hundreds of devotees gathered. Lord Nityananda came, Raghunath Das was there, and they distributed chira and dahi in various quantities and flavors, mixed with different kinds of yogurt and fruits, etc. So that is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there's a large banyan tree under which the devotees were sitting, and that banyan tree is still there on the banks of the Ganga. So Srila Prabhupada had been invited to come there, and with the idea that some of the land would be donated to ISKCON and then we would develop it. So Prabhupada was very much interested. It's an important place of pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And I think in February of 1977 we travelled there by car and had a good look around the whole area there. There's the banyan tree and a strip of land on the banks of the Ganga. And Prabhupada had a plan. He was going to build an elevated temple on that strip of land. So the bank would be there underneath, and then on stilts, then there would be a nice temple of Gaunatai up at the top. And we saw the house of Raghava Pandit, what was left of it. There's actually one very small building, about maybe the whole thing was probably about from where I'm sitting to the wall there and across. That was the whole house, very small, and it was quite broken down. Prabhupada said that we could measure the thing, take photographs, and then we would break that building down and then reconstruct it exactly as it had been before. So that was the idea. After visiting various places there in Panihati, we were on the way back. We had brought breakfast prasadam with us, and Srila Prabhupada took some breakfast in the car. And as we were driving along, then there were other devotees in another car. And then Prabhupada, after he had eaten, then he told us to eat, you know, his party that was with him in his car. But then he said, what about the other car? What about the other devotees? Have they got anything to eat? So we said, well, we don't know. So he said, well, stop them and see. So he had the car stopped. And then we asked them, do you have prasadam? And they said, no. So he said, now give them some prasadam. So he's very thoughtful. He was just going to take his prasadam and then everybody else can just, you know, get what they can. He hadn't had the car stopped and made sure that everybody got some prasadam. So it was very nice. So I mentioned about sometimes special visitors come, and then Prabhupada, if he was eating when they arrived, sometimes he would invite them in. So that happened one time when Yamuna Dasi came into India. This was on October 22nd in 1976. Because Yamuna, she had been a macrobiotic when she first met Srila Prabhupada in 1966. She had come, her sister was Janaki, and Prabhupada, after he initiated his first batch of devotees, some of them were living together, man and woman, but not married. So Prabhupada immediately got them married. And the first marriage ceremony was between Mukunda and Janaki. And Yamuna, she was living in Oregon, on the other side of the country in America. She was invited to come over for the wedding. So she came over, so the first thing that Prabhupada did was invite her to help cook a feast for the wedding. So she was a macrobiotic, you know, no sugar, no this, no that, nothing. But then when they had the feast, of course, our prasadam is exactly the opposite. So Prabhupada immediately taught her how to make, you know, gulab jams, you know, milk balls, soaked in sugar syrup, cooked in ghee. And she was kind of horrified. But the fact was that she did it, and then when she took the feast, just to satisfy, you know, her sister and Srila Prabhupada, then she actually liked it. So later on, when Prabhupada went to San Francisco, then Yamuna again came there, and she became a devotee herself. And then Prabhupada immediately asked her to make a cookbook. So anyway, that was like 67. So now we come forward to 76 in October. So this is the 22nd of October. Srila Prabhupada was surprised and pleased to receive Yamuna Dasi today. She arrived from America just as he was taking his lunch. Normally he doesn't receive guests while eating, but he immediately invited her to come and sit with him and offered her a small plate of his prasadam. So he sat her down and they got a plate, and then he took prasadam right off his own plate and put it on her plate, and then he had to eat with him. After eating, they sat together in his darshan room and chatted. She showed him photos of their ashram in southern Oregon and their worshipable deities, Sri Sri Radha Ban Bihari. Yamuna has come to ask for his formal blessings and approval to write a cookbook, something he suggested to her in 1967, but which she didn't feel competent to do until now. Although she has previously written, in calligraphy style, a book entitled Krishna Prasadam, but this has not yet been published. She told him that she intends to remain in Vrindavan for about 1 week, Then she will go to Calcutta to stay with one of our life members, Mr. C.L. Bajoria. Mr. Bajoria has a first-class cook who she has studied with several times before, and she wants to further study Bengali cooking with him. She also intends to do other research, and she will interview Srila Prabhupada's sister, Pishima. Srila Prabhupada was most happy with her proposal, and he gave her his full encouragement. So she stayed about a week. She was cooking for Prabhupada during that week, and then she went off with Palika Dasi, who was Prabhupada's regular cook at that time, to Calcutta, and also another lady, Shruti Rupa. She went with them, and they stayed about a week or 2 weeks in Calcutta, and then Jamuna went back to America. And of course, that cookbook that she eventually wrote, Lord Krishna's Cuisine, it was like an epic. It was about 1,000 pages. Maybe some of you have seen it, I don't know. But it took about 8 years finally to get it into publication, because doing a cookbook is very technical. Every single recipe has to be, you know, you have to practice it and get all the ingredients right and the weights and measures and give an exact description of every part of the process. So it takes quite a lot to do it. So she came out with this 1,000-page cookbook, Lord Krishna's Cuisine, and it was voted by all the top gourmet cooks and you know, the people that write the articles on cooking for the newspapers. So there's some association in America anyway, and they voted it the top cookbook of the year that it, I think maybe it was 84 or 85, around that time, but it was voted the cookbook of the year. And as a result of that, then Jamuna actually became a regular columnist, I think in the Washington Post or one of those big newspapers, and she used to tour around the country for years after that on the strength of this cookbook that she had written. So it was very, very successful. So clearly Prabhupada did give her his full blessings, and that manifested into this wonderful book. So another occasion when Prabhupada was visited by one of his senior devotees, February 28, 1977, Atreya Rishi Prabhu, who was the GBC in Iran, he arrived just at lunchtime, and he brought with him, this was in Mayapur, he brought with him a large basket of sweet lemons and oranges from Iran. So they have this particular fruit, small, but they call it the sweet lemon. So lemon is normally very sour and difficult to eat, but these are sweet. So he brought with him a big basket full of them. Srila Prabhupada was eating his lunch when he arrived. Generally, he doesn't see anyone while he eats, but he was so pleased to see Atreya that he insisted that he come and sit right next to him, and he personally made up a plate for him from his own plate. And then they sat and took prasadam together, and Prabhupada called me in and had me make some juice from the fruits that he had brought. So he was very happy with him. So that was a couple of times when I saw Prabhupada call devotees in and sit and eat with them. And because we were traveling with Prabhupada, we were there every day, but we never usually ate with Prabhupada. That was, you know, very, very rare occurrence. There was one occurrence when that happened with me, when Prabhupada had me sit and eat with him. Even though I'd been with Prabhupada about just over a year by this time, it was still, you know, I felt a very kind of special privilege to be able to sit and eat with Prabhupada. So this was on the train to Allahabad from Bombay. Prabhupada was traveling up there for the Kumbh Mela festival. That Kumbh Mela, it was, because it's held on the banks of the Ganges, just where the Ganges and the Jamuna come together. And it's actually called the Trivedi, which means three rivers, because it's said that the river Saraswati, which is not visible anymore, but that she also joins with the Jamuna and the Ganga at that spot there in Allahabad. So this is one of the places where when the ocean of nectar was churned and the pot of nectar came out, which was given to the demigods, this is in the Bhagavatam, then some drops of that nectar fell down. So one of those drops is said to have fallen right there on that spot in Allahabad, right where the three rivers meet. So every now and again they have this mela. The mela is like a spiritual fair. So every year there is a general mela, and it moves from one holy place to another in northern India. Allahabad is one of them. Then every 6 years there's the Ardha mela, which is what they call the half mela. And then every 12 years there is the Kumbh mela. Kumbh means full, or like a full pot. So every 12 years they have this Kumbh mela, and this was the 12th. It was the 12th Kumbh mela in the cycle. So every 12 years there's a Kumbh mela, and this was the 12th in a cycle of Kumbh melas. So 12 times 12 is 144 years. So this was said to be the most auspicious Kumbh mela in 144 years. So it naturally attracted a lot of people. And we were also going there. Prabhupada had attended the Kumbh mela in Allahabad in the Ardha mela in 1971 with the first batch of devotees that came to India. So now this was his return for this mela, Kumbh mela. So we were traveling. We set off in the morning from Bombay, and Prabhupada had already taken his massage and bath at 4:30 a.m. before we left. So he decided to have his full lunch at breakfast time, which I had packed away in a tiffin. So in India you have these little tiffin boxes, sections, and put different things in. So everybody was asked to leave the carriage so that Srila Prabhupada could eat in peace. And I stayed there to serve him. I took out his silver plate, and he sat cross-legged on the train seat. And then I set out all of the preparations from the tiffin in front of him on the seat opposite. In the train they have these little tables that stick out from the side. So I put his plate on there, Prabhupada sat down, and then I laid everything out in front of him. And then Prabhupada pointed out which preparations that he wanted, and I began to serve him as he was eating. So it was very nice to just sit there and even be able to serve him as he was eating. So then he pointed out puddies, then sabji and rice, etc. Then after finishing the sabjis and rice, he decided to have a little fruit. But then he insisted that I now take prasadam. And he made me sit opposite him and take all of his extras. So I was kind of embarrassed. He wanted me to sit and eat in front of him. And he wasn't yet finished either. And I took out all the fruit and broken it out, and I peeled an orange, and there were some grapes like this, and maybe a banana, I don't remember. But I put that down, and then Prabhupada started to help himself to the fruit, and he said, "Now you eat." So my plan had been that, I would serve Prabhupada, then he would wash up, then I'd clear everything away, leave the carriage, let Prabhupada rest for an hour, as he normally did, and then I would distribute his remnants to, there were one or two sannyasis and GBCs there, and I was going to distribute the remnants to the senior devotees in the next compartment. But to my great surprise, Prabhupada said, no, you take. So he made me sit down in front of him, and as he was helping himself to the fruit, then I had to eat his remnants, from the sabji and rice, etc. And as I was doing that, then when whatever fruit that Prabhupada had finished with, then he was passing it over to me and putting it on my plate as I was eating. So it was very nice. So that was very special. Even for me, I'd been with him over a year, it was still a very kind of special event. That Prabhupada was actually, practically feeding me. So he was so merciful to me that even though I'm such a dull-brained rascal, afterwards I handed out whatever was left to Rameshwar and Jagadish, and Prabhupada rested alone in his compartment. So we had a standing rule. Of course, when you're on Prabhupada's party, you have access to his Maha Maha Prasadam. The prasadam that's offered to the deity, that comes off the deity plate, is Maha Prasadam. And that which comes from the spiritual master's plate is Maha Maha Prasadam. So there was a standing rule on the party that Prabhupada's servants were not to monopolize the Maha Maha Prasadam. Prabhupada, you know, said you can't all just take that, it has to be distributed to all the devotees. So this was a strict rule. We would get something every day. And I would also, my lunch was usually, I ate whatever was left in the pots. After Prabhupada's plate had been served out, then I would sit down and I would get whatever was left in the pots, and then the rest would be distributed along with what was left over from Prabhupada's plate. That would go out to the temple devotees, wherever we were. So, on January 28, 1976, we were in Mayapur. Tamal Krishna Goswami had come at the beginning of the month to be Prabhupada's secretary for that month. And we got to Mayapur on 17th of January, so this was about a week or so later. So after his lunch this afternoon, Prabhupada sat at the end of the veranda enjoying the view of the Ganges. So after his lunch, Prabhupada had gotten into this routine. He would go out and sit for 20 minutes on a chair at the end of the veranda of the Lotus building. In those days there was only the Lotus building, and you know, then there was the front wall, and then over the front gate then you could see the Ganges in the distance. So he liked to go and just sit there, and he might talk with us for a few minutes, or he'd just sit there and chant some japa and just look over the fields and towards the Ganga there. So we were doing that this particular day. Then suddenly loud shouts and the slam of a door broke his tranquility. So he sent me to investigate. I found Tamal Krishna Maharaj sitting in his room before a plate of prasadam, clearly upset. He had just had an argument with Hari Kesh over who should get the remnants of Srila Prabhupada's prasadam. As I stood, Hari Kesh came back in and again began berating him. Several days ago, Tamal Krishna had asked Srila Prabhupada if he could eat the extra that was cooked for him, because he found that the kind of rice that the devotees eat in Mayapur to be too coarse for his digestion. And Prabhupada had approved. Because in Mayapur they eat this particular kind of Bengali rice, local rice, and it's kind of quite thick and coarse compared to, you know, the nice basmati rice that Prabhupada was always given. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was telling him, I just have a difficulty. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was known to be very particular about prasadam. So Prabhupada approved, he understood. He said, yes, you can have what's in the pots after it's been served to Prabhupada. But Hari Kesh was the cook. So Hari Kesh had previously received instructions from Prabhupada while we were in Vrindavan that all of his remnants could not be monopolized by his immediate servants, but should be distributed to the other devotees. As cook, Hari Kesh resented Tamal Krishna's acquisition of all the leftovers, while Tamal Krishna was arguing that he was only taking what was left in the pots and not what was left on Prabhupada's plate. Thus the dispute. Tamal Krishna also complained that he should not have been interrupted whilst he was honoring prasadam. So Prabhupada called them both onto the veranda. After hearing their arguments, he managed to resolve the issue to everyone's satisfaction. Prabhupada said that Hari Kesh should not have interrupted Tamal Krishna whilst he was eating. Respecting prasadam is a very important function, and there should be no disturbance. He said that otherwise one's appetite is lost, and indigestion is the result. He gave his permission for Tamal Krishna to eat what was left in the pots, but he also confirmed his desire that his prasadam be distributed. He told us there's absolutely no difference between what is on the plate and what is in the pot. Whether cooked for Guru or Krishna, it is all prasadam and is all just as spiritually potent. When I mentioned that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there was a distinction made between Maha Prasadam, the remnants of the deity offering, and Maha Maha Prasadam, which is the spiritual master's remnants, Prabhupada said the distinction was made for reference only. It is all prasadam. So anyway, that he resolved that very nicely. So Prabhupada distributing prasadam, of course that happened practically every temple that we went to, at Guru Puja time. After or as he was receiving Guru Puja, then when the general kirtan was going on, the devotees would all gather around Prabhupada's Vyasasan, and generally then they would come out with a big plate full of cookies. That was the favorite thing. Sometimes it was cut fruit, but that was a little bit messy to distribute. But generally it was always cookies, because that was clean and, you know, it was easy for Prabhupada to give them out, and the devotees liked them. So practically every temple that we went to, this was a daily affair, that during the Guru Puja Kirtan, Prabhupada would get this big plate and then he would start passing out cookies to everybody. So all the little kids would come up, and then the ladies would come up, and then the men would come up, and all these cookies would go out. So that was a very nice morning ritual. So this was also, it was being done in Mayapur. They weren't giving out cookies, but they had brought a plate full of sweets, milk sweets. So on January the 24th in 1976, in Mayapur, every morning at Guru Puja, Prabhupada is personally giving out sweets to all the children. He sits on the Vyasasan as each child comes forward to receive his prasadam. There is a small 2-year-old boy from Australia called Damodar, who persistently remains right in front of the Vyasasan each morning with his pudgy little hand held out. So he just used to stand there like this. Prabhupada gives him half a sweet, which Damodar then pushes into his mouth. Then he moves his hand over the back of his head, wipes his open palm on his sikha, and then again holds it out. Again, Prabhupada gives him another piece of sweet, and again Damodar repeats the ritual. No words are exchanged. Simply the boy's chubby palm comes out for the sweet, up to his mouth, over his head, and back again for more. This exchange with Damodar has gone on for several mornings now, and Prabhupada laughs to see him wipe his hand in such a fashion. "Who has taught him this?" he asked us. So he had seen, because sometimes you see the devotees, they eat, the men, and then they wash their hands, and then to just, you know, dry them, they just kind of wipe it on the sikha. So this little boy is only like, it was a funny little kid. He had a completely blonde sikha, and he had this very large forehead, like a big head, and these kind of big eyes. And he's kind of chubby as well. He was only 2 years old, so it was really funny seeing him. He wouldn't say a word. He'd just put his hand out and wait, you know, like this. And Prabhupada would be giving to everybody, all the other kids, and occasionally he'd give Damodar a piece, and then like this. So there was another prasadam leela with Damodar later on. Damodar had come up in the afternoon to Prabhupada's room, where he was giving darshan. So there were a few guests there, and Srila Prabhupada used to keep a jar of sweets next to his seat, and that was for giving out to all the guests. So little Damodar walked in, sat down next to the desk, and the jar of sweets is right next to him. So he's looking like this. Big eyes, looking at the jar. So Prabhupada's talking, and he sees Damodar there, and he sees him looking at the sweets. So he told me, he said, "Give him a sweet." So okay, so I took the top off, took out a sweet, big, they were like sweet balls, and I gave it to Damodar. So Damodar just went, the whole thing in one go, right into his mouth, and chewed it a little bit and swallowed it. And then he's looking again. So I thought, okay, he wants another one. So I gave him another one, straight down. Then he's looking again. So I okay, I gave him another one. So like this, about 5-6 sweets, big ones. And I was thinking, wow, this is amazing. This kid can really eat sweets. Srila Prabhupada, in the meantime, was sitting there behind his desk, and he was talking. And as he was talking, he was watching what was going on, and he saw me giving all these sweets to Damodar. And then he stopped. He said, "What are you doing?" So I said, "Well, he keeps that, you know, he keeps asking for another sweet." He said, "He's just a little kid." He said, "You know, a small boy. He doesn't know when to stop." He said, "If you give him any more, he'll be sick." So then he told me to stop. I had no experience in dealing with kids at that time. But of course, Prabhupada had 5 of his own, so he knew very well what was going on. So that was one prasadam leela with Damodar. Other places where Prabhupada took prasadam in unusual places, of course, was on planes and in cars. So on 1976, April 19th, we set off from Bombay for Melbourne in Australia. So as soon as we were airborne, Srila Prabhupada had his breakfast. I set out each of the 4 circular stainless steel containers from the tiffin box and filled them with whatever Srila Prabhupada I had these empty containers and then I filled them with whatever Prabhupada indicated from his well-packed tiffin box. From the multi-tiered container, he ate sabji, puri, rice, some fried savouries, vada and samosa, as well as some fruit and some sandesh. I served him very carefully, much to the interest of the other passengers, because when Prabhupada travelled, the devotees always got him a first-class ticket, and then, because he always had to have his servant with him, so the servant also travelled first class. Then all the rest of the party, which at this point was only his secretary, Pushtakrishna Swami, he was in the back, in the economy class. Later on, Pradyumna Prabhu joined us, and then Pradyumna's wife and son joined us as well. So they used to travel in the economy, but Prabhupada and his servant would always go in the first class. So we were sitting there, you know, these big seats and tables there, and I began serving, and all the other passengers, I could see they were kind of very discreetly looking to see what was going on as Prabhupada was taking his prasadam. As he does, wherever and whenever he travels, Srila Prabhupada maintained his regular eating schedule. Knowing this, I was well equipped for the journey, and I am by now well versed in all the items that Prabhupada requires when he's traveling. On the planes, he will never accept anything provided by the airlines, because they handle meat. He doesn't even like to use the utensils like knives, forks and spoons, because generally the metal ones have already been used. He will use the new plastic ones though. He won't eat anything touched by the karmis. He will not even accept the salt that the airlines provide. So in addition to the prasadam, I carried small packets of salt, pepper and ginger. Generally, of course, Prabhupada eats alone, but on the plane this was not possible. Unperturbed by his surroundings and the curiosity of the other passengers, he simply continued to follow his daily schedule. He ate very slowly and carefully. By watching him take prasadam, it was easy to understand that the Lord's mercy, prasadam, is to be rendered service by the devotee. Prasadam should be eaten as humbly as one performs other forms of devotional service. Completely freed from lust and other mundane attributes, His Divine Grace's devotion is apparent even in the most basic activity of eating. When he finished his meal, Prabhupada told me to call Pushtakrishna Maharaj. So he came up and there was an empty seat in the first class, so he just sat down and then we began to share out Prabhupada's remnants, which was very nice. So some of the passengers saw us eating the remnants of Prabhupada's half-chewed puris, and I think they were a little bit shocked, because Prabhupada had eaten half a puri and left it, and then we eagerly took it and, you know, split it up between us and ate it. And I saw one passenger was looking, you know, what's going on here? They're eating something that's already been eaten. But of course, in Prabhupada's association, we were unaffected by their mundane opinions. At the end of his meal, Prabhupada very carefully cleaned his mouth with a toothpick. Then he poured a little water onto his hand to cleanse it before drinking from the cup. He first swilled his mouth out and then he drank, and thereafter he completed his ablutions in the bathroom. By the time he returned, I had everything cleared away. So that was on an aeroplane. Shrutakirti Prabhu, he also tells a story when he was with Prabhupada, and they got on this aeroplane and it was breakfast time. So as soon as they sat down, but before they took off, then Prabhupada said, serve prasadam. So very dutifully, Sridhar Kirti Prabhu, you know, opened up the tray tables and took out the prasadam, laid it all out, put Prabhupada's plate out, and began to serve Prabhupada's prasadam. So in the meantime, everybody's coming on and sitting down, and then they close the door, and then, you know, the engines rev up, and they begin to taxi out, and then the air hostess, or the steward, you know, they speak over the thing, now everybody, we're going to take off, and they make their little speech, and put your tray tables up, put your seats upright, put on your belts, get ready for takeoff. And Prabhupada's just sitting there, very slowly eating. And so the air hostess, she comes up and she's looking like this, and she didn't want to say anything, because, you know, I guess Prabhupada, just Prabhupada by his presence, is just such a gentle, you know, personality, that she didn't want to just come up and say, hey you, what's going on? You know, you have to put your tables up. So, and Prabhupada was, you know, just not concerned. He was just eating. So Sridhar Kirti happened to look round, and the hostess is there like, you know, can you stop or something, you know? And Sridhar Kirti said, he just shrugged. He said, what can I do? He's eating, you know. So they actually took off with Srila Prabhupada still eating. That's very nice. Prabhupada was completely transcendental. Whatever he had to do, he did. That was it. So there was another occasion when we ate whilst we were on the road, literally on the road, and that was when we arrived in New Vrindavan, or at Pittsburgh Airport, rather, on June 21st in 76. And the devotees from New Vrindavan had come to pick us up, and then it was about an hour and a half or so to get there to New Vrindavan from the airport. So Kirtananda Maharaj was in the car with Prabhupada, and after a short while he produced some cartons of prasadam from the New Vrindavan kitchen, puris, sabjis, samosas, and various milk sweets. I thought that Prabhupada would just try a morsel to oblige the devotees, but to our delight, he had me spread out the preparations on the car seat, and he took a little of everything. He enjoyed them, and he encouraged us to take some also. He praised Kirtananda as a good cook, and he told us, so this was my dream, that a place should be there where we can get all nice foods, best foods, made from milk. Krishna is fulfilling our desire. Everything is there. These rascals, they do not know how to live or to eat. Intelligence is there, everything is there, but simply for want of training, they have become rogues. So, make them human beings, your countrymen. As he drove the last few miles to New Vrindavan countryside, Kirtananda Maharaj mentioned that the local authorities, including the sheriff, were becoming very favorable. A judge who had seen Srila Prabhupada on his last visit still keeps a picture of him on his desk. He said that the local television had agreed to show Yadavara Prabhu's movie, Spiritual Frontier. So, a couple of weeks before, we had been in Los Angeles, and on the last day, then we saw the world premiere of a film made by Yadavara Prabhu called Spiritual Frontier. And it was like a, almost like a documentary of life in New Vrindavan. And it, you know, it was showing the simplicity of Krishna conscious life in the country. And there was one scene there where it shows, first of all, Kirtananda making a crab apple chutney, and then it shows some puris frying on a wok. And there's a commentary going on as well. So when we saw the film, all the devotees had gathered in the temple room in Los Angeles, and then Prabhupada had come down. He was sitting on the Vyasasana, and then they projected the film onto the opposite wall of the temple room. So as it was showing, when it got to the bit where it was showing the devotees cooking, and then this picture came up of the wok with the hot ghee and then the puri floating in the ghee, then I just happened to, everybody else was looking at the film, I just happened to look over at Srila Prabhupada to see what he was looking at. And he was watching, and when he saw this puri floating in the ghee, he suddenly went like this, and he reached out as if he was picking it up and putting it in his mouth. So he loved the film. So anyway, now 2 weeks later, because Kent and Andrew have been there for the premiere of the film also. So now 2 weeks later we're in the car, and he mentioned that this film may be shown on the local TV. So then Prabhupada was happy to hear it, but he told him, one thing you have missed, how we are preparing all these foodstuffs. In the movie, Kent and Andrew asked, it was too short, how to prepare things? Yes, how from milk in different stages you get this foodstuffs. Kachuris, Shringar, Sandesh, Rubri. He gave a little chuckle. And this chana, dal, if it is fried, if you prepare nicely with a little hing and ginger, then it will taste exactly like meat. They will forget. If you give them without telling them, then they will think that they are eating meat. They prepare the semi-liquid meat like that. So, you give them a little piece and they will not understand that it is not meat. So he was kind of laughing. This is our substitute. So I told him that when we were in Los Angeles, Palika had made some butter and it had tasted so much like fish that Pushta Krishna Maharaj wouldn't eat it. Oh, I think yesterday I said cauliflower pakoras. Actually, it wasn't. It was butter. That Pushta Krishna Maharaj wouldn't eat it. Prabhupada smiled. With Urdal, you can prepare that fishy taste. Somebody told me that your Guru Maharaj had said that, I asked. Prabhupada laughed. Yes. Anyone who is not taking Urdal, he must be taking fish silently, secretly. So that was nice. So another pastime Prabhupada liked to occasionally do was buying boga. So on April the 5th in 1976, we were in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was taking his morning walk. So we went to look at some vacant land in Ramanreti that he would like to purchase. He suggested that our householders could build their own houses there and colonize it like our Los Angeles community. As we walked about, a local farmer went passed by carrying a large basket of green beans on his head. Srila Prabhupada spotted him and immediately began to bargain with him. After a lengthy exchange, he purchased the whole basket. The man left happily, having done his whole day's business within a few minutes. Gurudas Maharaj complimented Srila Prabhupada on getting a good bargain, because he bought quantity, so he was bargaining and got a very low price. But the man was happy because now he didn't have to spend the whole day at the market trying to sell his stuff. Prabhupada laughed, telling us it was something that he had learned in his childhood. My father used to do that. He will go to a vegetable vendor, so he has got a big basket. So he'll say, what do you want for all, the whole basket? So he's ready because he'll sit down for so long in the market. So at very cheap rate, then he'll give it. So it was not required in the family so much. And my mother, she would become very angry. Oh, you are bringing so many vegetables, it will be spoiled. But he would purchase like that. If you gave him in those days 50 rupees to go to the market, he'll spend all the money and he will bring home. So that was Prabhupada's father. He used to do like that, and Prabhupada learnt that from him. And there was another occasion when a similar thing happened. We were in Hyderabad at the farm there in December. Prabhupada was out on a walk in the fields, and then way over in the distance, maybe 300-400 meters away, we saw a man walking across the field with a basket on his head. So then Prabhupada said, call him. So we called the man over, shouted, and he comes walking over. Took him a minute or so. He comes over and he's got brinjal or eggplants in the basket. So immediately Prabhupada begins to bargain with him. So then the man, originally I think he wanted 13 rupees. Then he came down to 10 rupees. But Prabhupada would only offer him 6 rupees. So they were going back and forth like this for a couple of minutes. And Prabhupada wouldn't budge. And the man also wouldn't budge. So then Prabhupada said, all right, forget it. So then the man started walking away. So then, as he's walking away, we had a little discussion about, you know, well, actually, maybe it would cost more in the market, you know, than what he's asking. So then Prabhupada said, all right, call him back. So by this time, he'd gone about a couple of 100 meters. So then again, we shouted him. So again, he comes back. And then we thought, well, you know, Prabhupada's going to give him the 10 rupees. But he didn't. He started that bargaining with him again. And he offered him 7 rupees. So then the man refused, and he went back up to 13 rupees. So in that way, they were bargaining for another couple of minutes, and then again, no result. So again, the man walked off. He wouldn't sell. So then Prabhupada just let him go. And then Hansa Dutta, he started to think, and he said, well, actually, Srila Prabhupada, to get our vegetables, we'll have to drive all the way to the market in the van. So that means we'll use up so much petrol. And then the price in the marketplace is sure to be higher also. So, you know, it'll cost us more if we have to go to the market. So then Prabhupada said, okay, call him back. So again, he came back for a third time. This time he was a little bit fried, I could see. But then Prabhupada did actually give him his price, and he bought them for 10 rupees. But the man had actually calculated that he had a certain amount, maybe like 5 kilos or something in the basket. So that's what we paid him for. But when the devotees got back to the farm and they weighed it, they found out there was actually 3 kilos more than what the man had estimated. So Prabhupada ended up, if he averaged it out, he actually got his price. It worked out to about 7 or 8 rupees a kilo. So that was nice. So that's buying bhoga. Of course, another feature of prasadam with Srila Prabhupada was that Prabhupada himself was a very expert cook. And we've already read about how he was cooking in 26 Second Avenue, and how Srila Prabhupada personally trained up all the original cooks in ISKCON, and from those persons everybody else got trained up. So when I was with Prabhupada, of course, he wasn't cooking at all. He always had a cook. And there was a little incident that happened just after Jamuna Dasi had gone back to America, and then Palika and Shruti Rupa had returned from Calcutta. Then in the meantime, while they were in Calcutta, this other devotee, Pradyumna's wife, Arundhati, she had been given the duty of cooking. But Arundhati was not actually very expert. She was okay, but she was not expert. Palika was expert, Jamuna was expert, Shruti Rupa was expert. So there was this one particular preparation that she was having problems cooking to Prabhupada's satisfaction. It was a Punjabi badi sabji, a vegetable stew with spicy dried dal cakes, which is simmered in a seasoned stock. So somehow she hasn't been getting it quite to Prabhupada's liking. It has become such a frustration for her that Prabhupada decided that he would go into the kitchen and show her himself. So today, right after his massage, still wearing his gumsha, oil glistening on his golden skin, Prabhupada went to the far corner of the back garden and entered into the kitchen. So in those days, there was a very small kitchen just off of the back garden. Nowadays, they've changed that. They've blocked off the access from Prabhupada's side, and they've made it into the deity kitchen for the deities in Vrindavan. But at that time, it was just exclusively Prabhupada's kitchen. So his presence filled the small kitchen with the fragrance of sandalwood and mustard oil. The ladies had already been at work preparing freshly ground spices. Because of his delicate digestion and the high likelihood that any powdered spice is either old or adulterated, Prabhupada has his cooks grind various spices fresh every morning. He often instructs them on which spices and combinations that he wants. Just cumin, or cumin and black pepper, turmeric, fresh ginger, hot chili paste, etc. It often takes an hour or more to prepare them, and some, like turmeric root, must be softened for 5 days before it can be ground. With all the spices already prepared, the ladies were cutting up the vegetables when he entered. Accompanied by Bhagatji — Bhagatji was an older Indian man in his late 50s at that time. He lived right next door to the temple, just in the back alleyway. And when Prabhupada got that land at Ramanreti and they began building, then Bhagatji used to come and see him. And he regarded Prabhupada as his guru, although he was already initiated, but he accepted Prabhupada as his Shiksha guru. And he actually donated the land next to our land. He had a plot, which he donated, and that was used to build the Gurukul on. And he also gave 1 lakh of rupees, which was a lot of money at that time, to help with the building of the Gurukul. And he also became involved in helping the devotees to learn how to manage nicely in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada and he had a very nice relationship. And Bhagatji would come every day to cook chapatis for Prabhupada. And he used to cook these chapatis very thick. And he used to call them breads. So he would come every morning and he would ask Srila Prabhupada what he wanted for lunch. And as the ladies were cooking, then Bhagatji would go in and he would cook his breads. And then when it was served, then he'd send one hot bread in. Prabhupada would eat that, ring the bell, and then he would immediately make another one. That would be sent in. And then usually on the third bread, or chapati, Bhagatji would take that in himself. And then he would sit for a few minutes and just chit-chat with Srila Prabhupada as Prabhupada finished his lunch. So that was another exception to Prabhupada's rule about eating alone. That if Bhagatji was there, then he was always able to come and sit with Prabhupada. So anyway, Bhagatji was with Prabhupada when Prabhupada went into his kitchen. Prabhupada stopped briefly at the entrance, quickly surveying the interior before stepping in. It is a tiny place, about 2.5 meters wide, about 4 meters long, tapering into a point, and about 2 meters high. He was in a good humor, and he smiled with satisfaction as he stepped inside. "Oh, I have never been in my kitchen before. It is very nice." So relaxed and unhurried, he looked around at the benches, the burners, and the pots and pans, and then unexpectedly, he dipped into a small bucket of vegetable scraps where Shruti Rupa was sitting. Fishing out a large cauliflower core, you know what's a cauliflower in? Everybody knows what a cauliflower is, yeah. So, because the devotees were in the habit of just cutting off the little flowerets and then leaving the stalk and then just throw it away. So Prabhupada looked in this scraps bucket and he saw this stalk of the cauliflower there, so he immediately dipped in and fished it out. He said, "Why are you throwing this out?" Shruti Rupa flushed in embarrassed silence and Prabhupada shook his head slightly, but he didn't say anything more. His inquiry was enough to tell them not to waste anything again. He chatted amiably with Bhagatji as he sat down on a low stool in front of the 2 gas burners. With the ladies standing at the side, ingredients at the ready, he heated ghee in a heavy brass bottom pot over a high heat. In quick sequence, he briefly fried a few paste masalas and then he added potatoes and cauliflower. He then added water and the bodies and he simmered the whole stew until the vegetables were tender. As he cooked, he was laughing and chuckling with Bhagatji in Hindi. Palika stirred the pot, turned down the flame and continued to stir. Srila Prabhupada looked at it, reached over and turned the flame back up. Turning to Bhagatji, he said, "See, so simple, and still they cannot do." After 20 minutes, it was done, and then he got up to leave and take his bath. Bhagatji, who generally comes every morning to ask Prabhupada what he wants for lunch, and always makes his chapatis, was impressed. As they made their way along the small brick path to the house, Prabhupada laughed, and he told him, "Oh, I can cook for 100 men in less than an hour." Bhagatji laughed and he shook his head. "No, Prabhupada, that's not possible." Prabhupada laughed louder and he declared, "I bet you 1 lakh of rupees I can do it." At this, Bhagatji cracked up with laughter. "No, I'm not going to take your bet. You will win both ways. If you do it, you'll get 1 lakh. And if you don't succeed, you'll tell me to donate it." Prabhupada shook with amusement. He loved the joke and he admitted that it was a fact. So we don't gamble, but Prabhupada said, "I bet you 1 lakh of rupees I can do it." So, cooking for Prabhupada. Prabhupada's prasadam must be on time. That was one of the first things that I discovered when I started traveling with Prabhupada. January 29th, 1976, we're in Mayapur, and Hari Kesh was still on the party at that time. He was the cook. So for the past few days, I've been going down into the kitchen with Prabhupada's approval to learn how to cook from Hari Kesh. We are using Srila Prabhupada's three-tiered cooker. So in those days, Prabhupada had this, like a brass cooker with three sections. And it was like a pressure cooker. Yeah, everybody seen that? You're familiar with that. So inside, in the bottom, you put dal. In the middle section, there was a cup, metal cup. And you put the rice in that cup with water. And there were holes in the section so the steam could come up. When the dal cooks, the steam comes up through the holes, cooks the rice, and keeps on going up into the next section where you put chopped up vegetables, and then the vegetables also cook. Then after, once everything's cooked, then you take it out and put the spices, and then everything's prepared for Prabhupada's lunch. So Hari Kesh was trying to teach me how to use this cooker. So previously Hari Kesh had timed things so that prasadam was ready for Prabhupada immediately after he had bathed and dressed. But because he's taking his massage early now, Prabhupada has agreed to a fixed time of 1:30 p.m. for lunch. Because of his illness, Hari Kesh was starting late today. So Hari Kesh had some kind of stomach problem. Serious, it was colic or something like that. Colitis, that's what it was, colitis. So he was getting sicker and sicker every day. And this particular day, Hari Kesh didn't come out of his room till about 11:30 in the morning. So I could see he's really, really late getting started for cooking for Prabhupada's lunch. And by the time Prabhupada was back in his room and prasadam was due, we were still in the kitchen cooking. So the kitchen in the Lotus building was on the floor below Srila Prabhupada's. So I was down in the kitchen with Hari Kesh. Foolishly, I didn't go up and inform Srila Prabhupada for the reason for the delay, although I thought about doing it. I grew increasingly uneasy as the clock ticked on to 1:35 and then 1:40. Instead, I kept thinking, well, just another few minutes, and then it'll be finished. Because I was, you know, internally I was thinking I should go up and tell Prabhupada that we're late. But then I was thinking, no, it's nearly finished, I'll wait. So I was kind of caught between the two things, and instead of following, you know, my internal prompt, which was probably Super Soul trying to tell me, get up there and tell Prabhupada, I was down in the kitchen. So sure enough, suddenly, Anaka Dundabi, an extremely lanky English devotee, who sometimes stands guard at Prabhupada's floor, bursts into the kitchen. Hari Sori, Prabhupada's been ringing the bell for the last 10 minutes, and no one is answering. I think you'd better go up. So I zipped up the stairs, full of anxiety, and opened the door to Prabhupada's room. I got down to offer my obeisances, but I froze halfway as the blast of Prabhupada's anger hit me. I've never seen him so furious. He sat with his back stiff and straight. His face was flushed and his top lip was quivering as he shouted at me for being negligent. I've been ringing for 10 minutes. You didn't hear me? Where have you been? Where's the prasadam? I tried to explain the reason why we were late, that I was just waiting until his prasadam was ready. But the more that I tried to pacify him, the more agitated he became as he rammed home this point. I don't want your prasadam! Don't bring it, you rascal! Now go sit in your room and don't go anywhere unless I call you! His anger had the right effect. Due to dullness, I had neglected my duty, which was to serve him and keep him informed about what was happening. His sharp words crashed through the cloud of ignorance covering my brain as I realized that my inattentiveness was simply Maya. I hung my head and stopped trying to defend my position. finally, he relented a little bit. All right, now, just bring whatever is done. It doesn't matter, just bring whatever is there. So I ran down and I brought up whatever was ready. And actually, by that time, Harry Cash had managed to finish all the preparations, so it was all there. He accepted it without any further comment and with no sign of any agitation whatsoever. As easily as it had arisen, his anger had abated. After clearing his plate and wiping the desk down, I retired to my room and I didn't stir from there for the rest of the day. So that was my first it was the first time I really got chastised by Srila Prabhupada. And it was it was heavy. When Prabhupada shouted at you, you're really... So the only other time that I saw Prabhupada get as agitated as that about prasadam was about a year later. We were in Calcutta, it was February the 5th, 1977. Palika was the cook. So Palika was late with the prasadam. And there was no word from the kitchen. It was getting later and later and later. And again, Prabhupada rang the bell. I ran in, and I could see he was very agitated. And he said, "Where is the prasadam? Go and find her. Bring her here." Like this. So Palika came in, and Prabhupada blasted her. I mean, he was really angry with her, and he chastised her like anything. Not long, but heavy. And it's the only time I ever saw Prabhupada chastise one of his lady disciples. He was really, really heavy with her. So she kept her head down and apologized. And then, she went off and brought the prasadam. So when she brought the prasadam, and Prabhupada was again very calm and quiet. The prasadam came, she put it down. And then Prabhupada told her the reason why he got angry. He said, "The thing is that once the appetite comes up, then it must be fed." So in other words, if you're expecting to eat at a certain time, your body automatically begins to, the digestive juices begin to flow. But if your digestion starts working, but there's no food in there for it to digest, then it has a very detrimental effect on your whole digestive system. So, it's part of the science of eating. And with Srila Prabhupada, his digestion was so bad at that time that even the slight disturbance of any kind would cause all kinds of problems for him. So it's not that Prabhupada was getting angry, because his, tongue was agitated and he was, his lust was not being satisfied, which might be the case with us. We expect to eat something and then we get, all tense and upset if we don't get it. But for Prabhupada, it was a matter of, it was the science of eating. And for him, it was an important factor in keeping his health that he should eat regularly at the same time. And Prabhupada was the most regulated person I ever met. Everything, every day at the same time, day in and day out. His senses were completely under control. So it was very important. So, there was actually, I won't read this out because it's better if it's more easily understood if it's read, but on February the 5th in 76, that was when Harry Cash took sannyas, and then he was immediately sent out for preaching. So then I was left with the prospect of having to cook for Srila Prabhupada myself, and I was totally hopeless. So by good fortune, it just happened that Dayananda and his wife Nandarani was there. And Nandarani was also one of these ladies that had been trained up in India in the early days how to cook, along with Jamuna and Palika and the rest. So she took up the cooking. But before Harry Cash left, then he left me 3 pages of written instructions on how to cook for Srila Prabhupada. So he explained, about how to use the cooker and what to put in each section, and then the different kinds of spices, combinations that should be used, and also the different kinds of preparations that should be made for Srila Prabhupada. So I think I explained before there was 2 dry subjis and 2 wet subjis, rice, dal and chapatis. That was the main thing. So some of these subjis, one subject that Prabhupada always took practically every day was paneer. Paneer, of course, is cheese, fresh cheese. once you've heated the milk up and then turned it, then put it in a cloth, squeeze out all the whey, and then you're left with the cheese. And then that was cut up into small chunks, and then that was deep fried, and then a masala was made, put in water with tomato, and then the cheese was added, and then the whole thing was boiled into a wet sabji. So cheese and tomato, that was one of Prabhupada's favorite sabjis. And there was an incident about that particular using the paneer and how it was cooked later on when Hari Kesh rejoined the party in July of 76, but we'll come to that in a minute. Anyway, so those written instructions are there. You can find those in the first volume of my diary, but I won't read them now. It's a bit tedious to read them out. So, April the 8th, 1976, we were in Vrindavan. Again, Prabhupada, we've been discussing about this tour that we were going to go on to the West, and Prabhupada had decided there'll just be the three of us, himself, Pushyakrishna, as the secretary, and myself as the servant. And I had not yet cooked for Prabhupada, although I'd been with him about 5 months, 4 or 5 months by this time, because Hari Kesh had been the cook. Then when he left, Nandarani had come on for a month, so she was cooking. And that was when we left Mayapur, we came to Delhi, and then down to Vrindavan. Then from Vrindavan we went down to Bombay. So somehow or another I was always able to find somebody to do the cooking so that I didn't have to do it. But Prabhupada was now planning what's going to happen when we go to the West with just the three of us. So he said, well, it'd be very good if you learn how to cook. So then I was being sent into the kitchen every day to learn how to make chapatis from Bhagatji, because Prabhupada said that he makes the best chapatis. So Bhagatji's chapatis are thick, but they are well cooked. Each one of them puffs up perfectly and tastes sweet. Each day he comes to cook them for Prabhupada's lunch, stopping briefly to ask Prabhupada what he would like before entering the kitchen at the bottom of the garden. Prabhupada is encouraging me to learn in preparation for the next few months on the road. He said he will personally show me how to use his three-tiered cooker. So in fact he did do that. When we left Vrindavan, we went down to Bombay, and that was from Bombay we went west. So before we left Bombay on April the 13th, Prabhupada showed us how to prepare lunch using his three-tiered cooker today. Before his massage was finished, he got up and we went into the kitchen with him. He loaded up the cooker, putting in dal in the bottom tier, rice in the middle, and vegetables on top. He set the cooker on a low flame, and he had Prajumna make some chapati dough. 35 minutes later, at the end of the massage, he came back into the kitchen. He chaunched the dal, spiced the vegetables, made some chapatis, and then he ate. It was a simple, wholesome meal, expertly prepared with a minimum of fuss. Me and Prajumna were fortunate enough to share his remnants, which to me tasted far better than usual, having been cooked with Prabhupada's own hands. So it was a very nice opportunity. We got this chance to enjoy Prabhupada's personal cooking. That was a rare event. In the early days, you know, Prabhupada, as we read, was doing it every day, 15 to 20 persons. But by 76, Prabhupada rarely cooked. So it was very nice to sit there and watch him, you know, do this thing with his three-tiered cooker, and then he left us the remnants. And I can still remember, even today, I can remember that the quality of that prasadam was just different from anything that I'd ever eaten before. It was very simple, but the taste of it was so wholesome. It was just remarkable. So anyway, that happened a couple of times. Prabhupada showed us on two days, myself and Prajumna, how to use this cooker. So then we flew off. We went to Melbourne. And in Melbourne, we were fortunate that Banu Swami was there. In those days, he was a brahmachari, and he was a very good cook. So he at that time was with Guru Kripa's Sankirtan party. They were called the Namhata party. And they used to go and collect money in Japan and send that money for the building of Mayapur. So he was on a break and he was in Melbourne. And Prabhupada came, so Banu was immediately engaged in cooking the lunch for Srila Prabhupada. But I got a chance to cook for him for the first time. So for the breakfast, in addition to the fruits and the fried cashew nuts that the local devotees are preparing for him, Prabhupada asked me to make two additional preparations. Vada, which is soaked dal, mashed into a paste, and then deep fried, and chira, spicy fried flat rice mixed with deep fried peas and potato cubes. I think I explained about that the other day, how I was making that. So I was making this every morning. There was no room to cook, so I was actually cooking in a bus that was being used for traveling Sankirtan, and they had a small burner and pot. So I was making these two preparations, and Prabhupada liked them. So things were looking good. You know, I was trying out, done a couple of preps. Prabhupada liked them, so I was starting to feel a little bit confident that I would actually be able to cook for Srila Prabhupada if there was a need. And in fact, there was a need the following week. We were there in Melbourne for 1 week. Then we left and we flew into New Zealand. So in New Zealand, it was a very small temple, and there were hardly any devotees. So at lunchtime, there was nobody to ask, you know, to cook Prabhupada's lunch with. So then I thought, well, this is it. Then I've got my first chance to cook. So I got everything out. And using the cooker required much more expertise than I thought. It seemed so easy when I saw Srila Prabhupada make his meal in Bombay. I had everything prepared before the massage. I remembered to stop at the right time to put the cooker on the stove. So I put, you know, stopped halfway through the massage, put the dal in, put the rice in. I'd already chopped up the vegetables, I put them in, I put the whole thing on the flame, went back to massage Prabhupada. And then at the end of the massage, I went back into the kitchen, only to find that everything had turned into a mush. It had all dissolved. I had left the flame on too high, and the vegetables, rice and dal were all way overcooked. So with no time to prepare anything else, I had to serve it as it was. Needless to say, Srila Prabhupada was not happy. He could not understand how I could have made such a mess. And he told me bluntly, he said, "You have no brain." He said, "You were too dull to learn." Because there was nothing else available, he had to eat it. But it was a disaster that I don't hope to repeat. So everything, I just didn't realize. I had no idea about the flame and how long it takes to cook something. And so I just put the, you know, I thought you just put the flame on, put the thing on, and half an hour later, everything will be cooked. So when I came back, there was nothing left of the dal. It was just like dried in the bottom. And the rice was just like slush. You know, how it disintegrates. And then the vegetables, as soon as I touched them, they just fell apart, you know, just completely. So it was hopeless. Anyway, so the next day I managed to find one of the devotees' wives, and she cooked, and that was fine. So then from there we went to Fiji. When we got to Fiji, then half the, you know, half the island of Fiji, the population are all Gujaratis, or from Gujarati descent. Gujarati, you know, prasadam is about the best in the world. It's just wonderful. So every day there was about a dozen ladies cooking for Srila Prabhupada on the veranda of this house that we were staying in. And, you know, everything that you could imagine was being cooked. So Prabhupada was very happy, and I was very happy. So then we flew to Hawaii. So when we first arrived in Hawaii, then there was this woman devotee, Kusha Dasi. So she was there, and apparently I'd been told that she had cooked for Prabhupada previously. So, you know, I thought, great. So immediately I engaged Kusha in cooking. But then on the second day, then Prabhupada called me in and he said, she's using too much salt. So I knew that if word got out to Kusha before I spoke to her, that, you know, you're using too much salt, then she'll, you know, she'll get all disturbed and, you know, she'll be upset. So I thought, well, I'll tell him myself. But what happened was that word got out, I guess from Pushta Krishna or somebody else, that, you know, Prabhupada doesn't like your cooking. You know, instead of it being, well, you just using a little too much salt, just cut down on it, otherwise everything's okay. The word got to a, Prabhupada doesn't like your cooking like this. You, too much salt like this. So before I could speak to her personally, the word got out, she became discouraged. But then simultaneously, she suddenly was taken to the hospital suffering from a bad infection. So she'd been breastfeeding her child, and the kid had bitten her, and then she got an infection and she had to be rushed to the hospital. So that was it, no cook. So, yes, so this is on May the 6th. So on the 5th of May, so I had another go at cooking. It was the second attempt, so I thought this time I'll really try hard, you know, and I'll get it right. Unfortunately, it was another disaster. So, it was a complete failure, and Prabhupada repeated his criticism. I'm simply too dull to learn. So now on the 6th, the next day, Prabhupada's digestion is so delicate that a constant change of cooks can mean serious health problems for him. In evident frustration at my incompetence, he asks for the three-tiered cooker and some burners, gas burners, to be brought upstairs into his room, declaring that he would cook for himself. I was completely downcast that I was so useless that I couldn't even cook properly. But then Sukadev Prabhu, the temple president, he offered to try. So Prabhupada consented, because actually, obviously, he didn't want to have to cook himself, but he knew that I was so totally useless that there was only one way he was going to get a decent meal, and that was if he cooked himself. So, but Sukadev, he said, but Prabhupada, he said, you know, I can cook. Please let me try and see if you like it. So then Prabhupada was kind of relieved. Okay, yes, good. So he told him to go ahead. So he consented, and today's lunch turned out to his satisfaction, except for the dal, which Sukadev had cooked down into a mush. Prabhupada said that it was untouchable, but that was his only complaint. So Sukadev is going to cook every day now. And he did it actually very successfully. So 2 days later, Srila Prabhupada declared Sukadev's cooking first class today. So I am relieved. He is not only using the three-tiered cooker to do dal, rice and bitter melon, but he has another 6 pots going at the same time, which he makes 3 wet and 3 dry subjis from. Added to this is a very palatable lassi made by one of the ladies, which his divine grace said was very good. So they were doing this very elaborate thing. Prabhupada was very happy with it, so that was great. So then we flew to the mainland. When we got to Los Angeles, there was Jamuna and Palika waiting there in Prabhupada's quarters when it came time for cooking. So they cooked for him for the 10 days that we were in Los Angeles, because they were the best cooks in the movement. And then when we came to leave Los Angeles, Rameshwara came to see me, and he told me that now we want to send Vishaka with the party so that she can take photographs and write an article for the Back to Godhead magazine about Prabhupada's summer tour in America. So she was added to the party. So then I thought, and then he said, and also there's this one boy, Rakshana. Rakshana had been a police officer in Chicago before he became a devotee. So he joined the movement. And then when he was initiated, Prabhupada, because he knew that he'd been a police officer, he gave him the name Rakshana. Rakshana means protector. So it was a nice name. And when Prabhupada came to America, then Rakshana was added to the party as a bodyguard. Because by 76, then we were having a lot of problems. Oh, it was just starting to arise with what was called the deprogrammers. So these were people that were hired by disgruntled parents who didn't like the fact that their kids had rejected their lifestyle and taken up this very strange form of, you know, religion and joined this Hare Krishna cult. So there were attempts to kidnap devotees from the temples and then take them away and then force them to become ordinary people again. And this became known as deprogramming. So the propaganda was that we were all brainwashed and we've been programmed to become vegetarian. We've been programmed to, you know, repeat this meaningless words every day for 2 hours and become like zombies, and etc., etc. So there were so many accusations, and the deprogrammers were becoming very active. So the devotees were a little concerned that, you know, this is America, so many people have guns, it could be a little dangerous, maybe somebody will try to do something. So Rakshana was added onto the party as a bodyguard, and he was a karate expert and all this kind of stuff. So then I asked Rameshwar, or, you know, Palika and Jamuna have been cooking, and they're very expert, you know, can either one of them travel with the party as well whilst we're in America, so that Prabhupada gets a good standard of prasadam and consistent, you know, wherever we travel, instead of me having to find somebody at every temple we go to. So then they agreed to that. So then Palika was added to the party as Prabhupada's cook. So she traveled with us for the 2 months that we were in America. So that solved that problem. Anyway, so the following week after we'd been in Los Angeles, on June 14th, we were in Detroit. So when we came to Detroit, then Prabhupada was met by Ambarish Prabhu and Shruta Kirti. So Shruta Kirti had been Prabhupada's previous servant, and he was a very expert cook. He was a very expert servant, actually. In my opinion, Shruta Kirti was the best servant that Prabhupada ever had. He could do everything, cooking, typing, you know, all the other massage, all the other duties. So Prabhupada was generally very happy with him. So, and I was I think I was the first servant that Prabhupada ever had that couldn't cook. And I was always kind of amazed how Prabhupada actually kept me on the party, because that, you know, the cooking duty was one of the important things and I couldn't do it. But anyway, somehow or another he did. So Ambarish and Shruta Kirti were talking with Prabhupada in the morning about opening this new prasadam restaurant in Boston. And I came in, it was time for Prabhupada's massage. As I stood in my gumcha ready for Prabhupada's massage, Shruta Kirti told him that I look as if I could give a very good massage. To my embarrassment and everybody else's amusement, Prabhupada replied with good-humoured sarcasm, Harry saw his defect as he cannot cook. Otherwise, he is your duplicate. Except cooking. He knows very good cooking. So Pushta Krishna Maharaj chimed in that, well, he knows how to eat, but then Prabhupada switched the mood. A young man must eat, he said. Why should he be like me? So anyway, that was in Prabhupada's mind, my expert cooking. But let's see, that was the 14th of June. The next day, then I had a course to celebrate a little bit. Because in the evening, Prabhupada sent for Palika. And he asked for me also. I was very happy when he asked her to make chira the same way that I cooked it. So although I have failed as a cook, Prabhupada does occasionally ask me to make this fried rice, this chira preparation, usually in the evenings. And he likes it, and he actually told Palika, now you learn from Harry Sori how to make this chira. So I was in ecstasy. It's the one thing that I could do in cooking. Then the only other preparation that I think that I ever made for Prabhupada was in France. What had happened that when we left Bombay, just a few days before we left Bombay in April, Prabhupada told me, he said, now while we're traveling, he said, I want you to bring some neem powder. So he said, you just get, you know, some neem leaves, you dry them in the sun, and then powder them up, and then bring them with us. And he said, I may require that, you know, at some point for my prasadam, to mix in with the prasadam. So I got a big branch and put it out on the roof, and after a couple of days, all the leaves were dried up. I took them and I pounded them up, and then I had a bag with all this neem powder, plastic bag, and I put that in my suitcase. That was in April, and Prabhupada never asked for it. And several times I was thinking, well, you know, maybe Prabhupada's not going to use this, I might as well chuck it out. Then I thought, no, I better not. I'll keep it just in case. And sure enough, when we got to France at the end of July, so this was like maybe 3 months later, Prabhupada called me in one morning and he said, you have that neem powder? So he remembered about it. He never mentioned it the whole time, but then he said, "You have that neem powder?" So I said, "Yes." I was happy I could say that. Then he said, "All right." He said, "I want you to make some dal patties. And you put 2/3 dal and 1/3 neem and mix it together and make, you know, like a small cake. Fry it. Just lightly fry it." So I did that. And I get it to Prabhupada for his lunch. And they naturally come out deep green, you know, because of all the neem in them. So Prabhupada looked and he said, "Hmm." So then he took a bite. Then he ate it and he said, "Oh." He said, "Maybe we use too much neem." But anyway, he ate, there were three or four of them, so he ate them. Then later in the afternoon, he rang the bell, I came in, and he said, "Actually," he said, "that was very good." He said, "That neem was very effective. It has helped my digestion a lot." So from that, for a few days then, I was making these neem patties for Prabhupada. Now, by this time, Hari Kesha had rejoined the party as the secretary, but he was also supposed to do the cooking again. So we had left Palika in America. When we left New York, Palika flew back to Los Angeles. We flew to England. Hari Kesha joined us there, and he was supposed to be Prabhupada's cook. But the first few days we were there, Prabhupada was so sick that he practically didn't eat anything. You know, he'd gotten sick on the flight over. Then we had come to France. He was starting to feel a little better, and so he was taking his regular meals again. Somehow or another, Hari Kesha could not recapture the expertise that he'd had before when he was cooking for Prabhupada. And every day, practically, Prabhupada was complaining about something. One day, I mentioned about, you know, this fresh paneer that was, every day that was made, it was deep fried, it was cooked with tomato, and, you know, this wet vegetable was made with it. So one day, Hari Kesha just decided, well, instead of using the paneer to make this wet vegetable, I'll make a sweet with it. So instead of, you know, cooking it with a tomato, he deep fried it and he cooked it in a sugar solution, and it came out like crystallized paneer cubes. There's a name for that preparation. It's in the cookbook. So anyway, he just served it out, and then Prabhupada rang the bell, called him, and he said, "What is this?" He said, "I never asked for this. Why did you do this?" And he said, "Oh, well, I just thought, you know, it'd be nice, you know, to give you something else for a change." Prabhupada said, "Don't do anything unless I ask for it." He said, "I never asked you for this. I wanted it, I liked it the way that it was." Then another day he was trying to make chapatis. And somehow or another, you know, because he didn't have like an open flame, I think it was. Or it was a gas burner, that's what it was. And he couldn't figure out quite how to get the chapatis to puff up on the flame. So when he was bringing in the chapatis, Prabhupada kept complaining, "What is this? These are useless." So then one day Prabhupada went into the kitchen, and Hari Kesha was saying, "Well, it's because of this gas cooker I can't get the knack. I don't think it's possible to cook the chapatis properly, you know, because when you do chapatis, first of all, when they're rolled out, then you cook them when they're flat. And then after that, once they've been kind of cooked through, then you put them on an open flame, and they're supposed to just kind of expand into this, like a gas chamber, hot air gas chamber." So he couldn't do it. So Prabhupada went into the kitchen, he rolled out a chapati, you know, cooked the thing, then he threw it on the flames, and immediately, boom, it came a perfect chapati. Prabhupada took the chapati and he threw it at him. He said, big brain. He said, "You're so intelligent, you can't even make a chapati." Anyway, so this was going on. So then on August the 7th, 1976, we were leaving France for Iran. We had to be at the airport by midday, so the morning was hectic. Prabhupada had his massage at 8:30 a.m. and prasadam at 10 p.m. Right after this, at 10 a.m., right after this, he had to visit the local post office to sign for a registered letter that had been sent to him from England. The postal authorities had refused to give it to the devotees insisting that Prabhupada had to collect it himself. That done, we proceeded on, escorted by just a small party of local devotees. Finally, we boarded the Iran Air flight at 1:15 p.m. For a 1:15 p.m. departure and a 4-hour 45-minute flight to Tehran. As soon as we settled into our seats, Prabhupada turned to me. He caustically complained about Harikesh's cooking and the erratic nature of his offerings. After several minutes expressing his dissatisfaction, he concluded, "He is cooking 90% for himself. He is not cooking to my desire." I had to think what to do. Prabhupada was making it clear that he wanted some change, but he didn't say it directly. Harikesh was trying his best, but somehow Prabhupada wasn't satisfied. So he just complained, but he just left it with me. He didn't say do this or do that, or even tell Harikesh. He just sat down and he just suddenly started complaining about his cooking. So I was thinking, well, you know, there's obviously a reason why Prabhupada said this. He wants something done, but what to do? So I mentally resolved that as soon as we got to Tehran, I would contact Los Angeles and insist that Palika Dasi be sent to join up with us in Bombay to resume her service as cook. So we were going to Tehran for 6 days or 7 days, but in Tehran, Nandarani was there, and Nandarani was a good cook, so I figured, well, she can cook there, and then in the meantime, I'll have Palika sent from Los Angeles and meet us when we get back to Bombay, and she can be the regular cook again. So I figured that this would ensure Prabhupada would have a good and steady standard of cooking. It is absolutely essential to his health. The only other alternative would be for his personal servant to do the service, but I am already proved to be a failure. And even apart from this, when his servant has to do both the cooking and the massage, then neither service can be rendered as efficiently as when each is performed by a separate devotee. Palika's cooking of first-rate prasadam, made just according to Prabhupada's wishes, enabled me to give him a long and attentive massage when we were in America. So I felt that a return to this standard was best. His Divine Grace's health is gradually deteriorating, and I want to assure him of at least a good diet to help forestall any major health problems. So August the 8th, the next day, one of the first things that I did on our arrival was ask Atreya Rishi Prabhu to send a telex to Los Angeles from his office with a request that Palika Dasi rejoin our party in India next week. After Prabhupada's complaints on the aeroplane leaving France, I can see no alternative. Harikesh Maharaj has conceded that his cooking is not satisfying his divine grace, and while we are here, Nandarani will do it. So he was also kind of frustrated that he couldn't get it right. So then on August the 13th, the following week, we arrived back in Bombay. We came through customs, got in the car, drove to Hare Krishna land. We came to the back of the land where Prabhupada's building was, and there was a small crowd of devotees waiting to greet Srila Prabhupada. It was in the night time. Palika Prabhu was waiting amongst a small crowd of devotees at the entrance to Prabhupada's apartment building. Srila Prabhupada was happy, but surprised to see her. "Oh, you're here." She was surprised at his surprise, telling him, "Well, I've come to cook for you." They both then turned and looked at me inquisitively. She, because she thought Prabhupada had personally called her to come to India, and he, because he had not been informed that she was rejoining the party. Thinking that Prabhupada might not agree to having money spent for his personal needs, I had taken a gamble that he would approve. So I didn't tell him when I sent the telex. I just sent this telex: Palika must go to Bombay immediately to be Prabhupada's cook. They all thought it was coming from Prabhupada. So we got there, and then Prabhupada saw her, and then he was surprised, and she was surprised, he was surprised, and then they looked at me. So I had to, now with some trepidation, I explained my actions in sending for her motivated by my desire that he get good prasadam every day. Then I waited for Prabhupada's response. Anyway, now there will be no difficulty, he said with a gentle smile, filling me with relief. So that was it. That was all he said. All right, now there won't be any, at least there won't be any difficulty. So Palika actually stayed on the party up until March of 77. There were some gaps in her service, like when she went to learn cooking, more cooking with Jamuna. And also she developed eczema on her hands. She had some problem with that, and it was giving her some trouble. So when we went down to Hyderabad, she didn't come down. She wanted to get treatment for that. She didn't want to cook while she had this skin problem. So at that time then Arundhati was cooking, and then Shruti Rupa also did some cooking for Prabhupada when we went from Hyderabad to Wardha, and also at the Kumbh Mela. But when we came back to Bombay at the end of the year, then Palika was there and she rejoined the party. Then when I left the party in mid-March of 77, Bhakti Charu Maharaj joined the party, and he was learning how to cook. He was a Bengali, so he knew, you know, Bengali foodstuffs at least, and Prabhupada was training him how to cook. So then Prabhupada took the opportunity to also send Palika off the party, because he said, now he said, we should just be sannyasis and brahmacharis. So although he had no objection when I was there to having Palika travel, but as soon as he got the opportunity, he said, it's actually better I'm a sannyasi that we don't have any ladies on the party. So then he sent her also back to Bombay, and Bhakti Charu came on and he began cooking. So another person that was cooking for Prabhupada sometimes was Pishima, Prabhupada's sister. And that was a whole it was a whole leela between Prabhupada and his sister, and her insistence on cooking for him, because she used to cook this really heavy, heavy stuff, and Prabhupada, whenever he ate it, he would get sick. So February the 27th, 1976, Prabhupada had come to Mayapur. Pishima knew that he was in town, so she came to Mayapur as well. Prabhupada is not feeling well, yet he continues to receive visitors and take his walks. On top of a bad cold, he now has uremia again, so he's not taking rice. Uremia is when your kidneys don't work properly, then the kidneys don't eliminate the uric acid from the blood. And what it does is it gathers in the extremities of the body, and Prabhupada's hands and feet used to puff up with this fluid. You could actually press down and it would leave a dint in his hands or his feet. And it's actually a very, very painful condition, but Prabhupada would just tolerate it. So sometimes when it got too bad, he would take a diuretic medicine. He rarely, if ever, took Western medicine, but this was one Western medicine that he did take. It's called a diuretic pill. He would take half a pill, and what it does is it actually draws the excess water or fluid out of the body, and it makes you pass it all out. So he would take half a pill, and then when he'd achieved the effect and the swelling had gone down, then he would stop taking it again. So he was suffering from that quite frequently, actually. So his sister, who is still staying here, insists on cooking for him. But he complains that she uses too much chili and ghee, or sometimes heavy doses of mustard oil, which causes digestive problems. So in Bengal, they're very fond of mustard oil. They put it on the body and they also cook in it. It's heavy stuff. If you've ever eaten any preparations, sabjis, you know, cooked with mustard oil, it's really hard to get it down. The Bengalis are kind of used to it. So Pishima used to cook with mustard oil. But Prabhupada was sick, he was having problems, and Pishima was insisting, no, she has to cook. So on the 29th, 2 days later, Prabhupada refused to allow Pishima to cook for him anymore. After eating her lunch yesterday, he became ill and he had to take rest at 8 p.m. He called her in today and he told her to return to Calcutta. She argued with him. Then Prabhupada shouted at her in Bengali and she became upset and started to cry. He was telling her that she had to go, and she refused. Then finally, she got up in tears and left the room. I was sitting there, there was just Prabhupada, his sister, and me in the corner, and Prabhupada's really getting into her, and he's, you know, really chastising her. And she's sitting there, and she's trying to defend herself. No, I'm not going to go. They're talking in Bengali, and she's crying at the same time. So I was kind of like sitting there, this is, you know, it's a whole leela between Prabhupada and his sister, completely transcendental. So they have a very special transcendental relationship. Apart from being Srila Prabhupada's sister, she even looks like him. Pishama is also an initiated disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and a great devotee of Lord Krishna. As he relaxed on his asana after she'd gone out, he told me that she should stay in Calcutta and look after their childhood deities. He shook his head and he laughed. She's got some idea of traveling with me. She thinks that I am her brother. This is the problem. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, not because it changed him as a person, but to get away from the family. Generally, the family members, they don't take instruction. I was the same person before taking sannyas as after, but I took sannyas for this reason. Otherwise, I could have done the same things without it. So he said, she thinks that I'm her brother. This is a problem. So then a year later, Pishma came again. She came to Mayapur. Again she was cooking, and again the same thing happened. Palika was there, and then Prabhupada was telling Palika, now you go in there and you make sure so that she only cooks what I want, because she would only cook what she felt that he ought to have. So Palika had to go in there and battle it out with Pishma every day in the kitchen. Pishma, sometimes she would lock the door so that Palika couldn't get in, or sometimes she would hide the pots so that Palika couldn't cook. It was the whole thing that was going on there. It was very far out. So anyway, that was the kind of relationship. But then later that year, October the 13th, this was the last month of Prabhupada's stay with us. He had returned to Vrindavan, and of course by that time, you know, his body was completely finished. And we all knew that, you know, or at least that was the thought, that Prabhupada was coming back to Vrindavan and that he was going to leave. So on October the 13th, 1977, then Pishima actually arrived in Vrindavan to come and see him. So Prabhupada called for his sister and he spoke in Bengali. Prabhupada told her, sometime in the past, I heard that you were not allowed in the room. So if there is any offense, I want you to forgive me. And then to Bhakti Charu Maharaj, who was standing there, apart from being my sister, he said, she is my god sister. She took Harinam Diksha from Bhaktisiddhanta. If we make offense upon any Vaishnav, it is not good. So please ask her to forgive me. I am only taking juice, but I would like to eat something. So, today I'm going to eat something, solid food. It doesn't matter whether it does good to me or bad to me. Nothing can be worse than this, the condition that he's in. She is a Vaishnavi, so it will be good for me. Probably I became a little puffed up because of my opulence and success. Now God has shattered that pride. If you don't have your body, then what is there to be puffed up about? The Bhakti Charu Maharaj said, Srila Prabhupada, whatever you have done for Krishna. Prabhupada said, that may be, but in this world, unknowingly, you commit offenses. So Bhakti Charu said, you can never commit offenses, Srila Prabhupada. You are God's dear one. How can you commit offenses? Prabhupada said, I am a little temperamental person. Often I use words like rascal, etc. I am never compromised. They used to call it Kurul Nye Prachar, preaching with a pickaxe. You know what a pickaxe is, yeah? You don't know what a pickaxe is? It's one of these things, you have a big stick and there's a steel thing, you use it for digging up the road. So Prabhupada was saying, this is called Kurul Nye Prachar. Kurul means pickaxe, preaching with a pickaxe. Kurul in one hand and Bhagavatam in the other. This is how I preached. Anyway, make all the arrangements for her. So actually she did cook for Prabhupada. And that was, you know, at the end there, after this chastisement and this whole leela that they'd had. Practically his whole life. I mean, he was the elder brother, she was his younger sister. And so he used to, you know, take charge of her, basically. So he used to tell her all the time what to do. So right at the very end, he was saying, actually, though, she's a Vaishnavi. So you ask her to forgive me. Now, whatever she wants to cook, let her cook, and I'll eat it. Even though he couldn't eat anything, actually, at that point. It was impossible for him to digest anything. But she did cook, and he did eat it. So, let's see. Something else that Prabhupada's eating at that point. This was a couple of days later. One of Prabhupada's old friends, Dr. Ghosh, he had known him in Allahabad when he was living there in the 30s. So he had come to see Prabhupada. So he said that Prabhupada's stomach and liver were all right, but he stressed that Prabhupada should eat more and drink lots of fluids. Prabhupada's sister cooked fried eggplant, fried portals, puddies, yogurt blended with figs, apricots and raisins, papaya, coconut milk blended with avocado, and Srila Prabhupada ate very heartily. So he hadn't eaten anything for about 2 months at that time, 2 to 3 months. Then fishermen cooked this whole thing, all fried, eggplant, portal, puddies, like this, and Prabhupada just ate the whole lot because she had cooked for him. So that's Prishima. Any questions up to this point? Getting a little late, 10 past 8. Anybody have any comments or questions about cooking for Prabhupada? Yes?
About this point, this relationship Prabhupada with his sister, it seems like there are situations in our life where we are like following one track and there are like things which are like taking us another way. There is some conflict between different duties or things to decide. There is some conflict what to do.
How does that relate to Prabhupada and his sister?
He was not supposed to eat. Or to say fried food or something, but because of love for the sister, he accepted it.
Yes.
But it gave problems to him, right?
Well, at that point, because at the very end there was no question, you know, that anything that went in there was not going to be good. You know, Prabhupada's whole mood at that time was just all leela. That's all. He was just enjoying, you know, some rasa with his. Disciples. He was preparing to leave. His body was finished. There was no question of it at that point. Although we couldn't at that time think in those terms, we actually, you know, we had a hope that somehow or another Prabhupada was going to come through that and then gradually recover again. But from Prabhupada's point of view, he knew his body wasn't working anymore. It was finished. So whether he, you know, eating, it didn't make any difference to him. Yeah, so he wanted that exchange with his sister, that this was the one service that she liked to do for him, was cook. And previously, as he said, I used to be very temperamental with her, and I would chastise her. And he would always send her home. She would come and cook for him, and then after a day or two, he would, you know, send her home. So finally, at the end there, it was a different mood. It was a different leela. So according to time, place and circumstance, then you make adjustments. This is all rasa. It's the mood. It's the state of the consciousness. So that you have to judge. If you ever put into that situation, you have to judge for yourself what is more important and then make your course of action accordingly. A year before, he had told her, go back to Calcutta. I don't want you to cook for me. You know, you're making me sick. But now he was saying, no, whatever you cook, I'm going to eat. Yeah.
I heard, I don't know when or where, but I heard that Prabhupada insisted that some of these programs should be very secretive.
should be?
Vedic preparation. Some of that is like not, for example, some cake which is a recipe from some Karmi cookbook.
Vedic.
I don't know whether Prabhupada insisted that all the prasadam for the Sunday feast should be strictly Vedic. Because we've already, you know, heard about when he was in Hyderabad there, and Jagadish had asked what kind of prasadam should we cook for these villagers, and Prabhupada said it doesn't matter, whatever they like, you cook, you know. So as a general principle, to attract people, you have to give things that they find palatable. You know, so I mean, a lot of temples, you know, sometimes they cook, even now I see in India they cook pasta. Yeah, it's become very fashionable. In Mayapur, they practically every meal, that they, every feast they have, you know, huge buckets full of pasta. You know, that's from Italy. We never used to have that in the 70s. But now even in India they do it. So things change. And it's really a question of what people like. But Prabhupada did want to introduce, you know, samosas, pakoras, kachoris, all these nice preparations. You know, because they mentioned that this is what Krishna likes, specifically. But also, Prabhupada considered them to be high-class food. That, you know, that's the point. That, you know, the Vedic preparations are actually mode of goodness automatically. They're very high-class kind of eating, whereas a lot of the things that we eat in the West are very low class, you know, in the name of whatever. But I always remember that Prabhupada said about split peas, you know, because we do dal, there's chana dal, ur dal, these different kinds of dal. This is in India, that's Vedic. But a lot of devotees, at least when I joined, we used to like split pea. And apparently Prabhupada said that split pea was fifth class. Said, Urdal or Chanadal, this is nice. But split pea, this is fifth class. And he didn't think very much about split peas at all. But we used to like it, so he didn't stop us from eating it. So you have to see what your local, you know, people like local preparations. There's no harm in cooking that, but give them a taste of Vedic cooking as well. Any other questions? Yes, please. Pizza. I don't know, actually. I never, at least when I was with him, I don't think he was ever given pizza. I'd have to check with Shruti Kirti. He may know. I know he had ice cream sometimes. He liked that. And guacamole. He didn't like avocado. When we were in Melbourne, we had given him some avocado, because in Australia, you know, they grow avocado there, very, very nice. Avocado has it's a particular kind of taste. And when we gave just the plain avocado to him, he didn't think very much about it at all. He didn't want it, because he just didn't think that it had a good taste. But later on, when we got to Los Angeles, they made this preparation, guacamole, which is avocado whipped up with yogurt, and then you add pepper and salt. And when they gave that to Prabhupada, he liked it very much. So you know, depends on what there is there. I guess he liked the taste of the yogurt there. But Western preparations, I can't really think of any that I know of that he was given when I was traveling with him. I'm sure devotees at some point did give him stuff like that, but we'd have to find out from Shruti Kirti or somebody. Any other questions? Yes, from on Ekadasi. Well, Ekadasi Prasadam. But he liked puddies made from buckwheat. Yeah, or in India, there's, what's it called? It's like a water chestnut, but they make a flower from it. And they use that on a codicil, so you can still have putties on a codicil. But apart from that, you know, just vegetables and the regular stuff. Nothing like really special as far as I can remember. No more questions? Okay, well, we haven't finished this segment. My throat's getting a little bit sore, so I'm going to stop at this point. But we can, let me just see how much there's left. Where are we? What's the page? Page 29. Oh, actually, there's not much left. There's only one more page, two pages. So I may as well finish this. All right, we'll just go on for a couple of more minutes. So, cooking for health. I think I already mentioned that how Prabhupada would adjust the spices and everything in order to, you know, suit his digestion. August the 15th, 1976. Palika's soaked black pepper and cumin seed and then ground them into a paste. He had to do the same with turmeric. She cooked his lunch using this spicing, carefully mixing the paste with the required amount of water and adding it to his lunch. Then this evening he called her in and he had to make two parathas and a potato and eggplant subji. We were delighted to see him eat, and he told us that the spicing had given him a good appetite. So that was, you know, how he adjusted. Sometimes when he didn't have much appetite, use a particular kind of spice preparations, and then that would get everything working. So now, vegetarianism. Of course, we like to advertise we're vegetarians, but Prabhupada was not interested in advertising that we're vegetarians. There was a letter that came on January the 9th, 1976. This was from Tushta Krishnaswamy. He was with this breakaway group that had formed in New Zealand. And he had sent a long letter explaining all the different things that they were doing. So pleased with their preaching efforts, Prabhupada sent a long letter in reply, dealing with his report point by point. He especially stressed the importance of book distribution. So far, the devotees being hesitant to distribute books on account of pressure, sometimes pressure is required, especially when one is not so advanced. Of course, it has to be applied properly, otherwise there may be some bad taste. But spontaneous service can only be expected from advanced devotees. It is vaidhi bhakti. Vaidhi means must. Sometimes devotees are promised a plate of maha prasadam for the best book distributor, so there is no harm. Actually, one should try to serve Krishna to his or her full capacity without thought of any reward. The service itself is the reward, but this takes some time to actually realize, and until that platform is achieved, some pressure or inducement is required. So that was, you know, they would give the top book distributor. This was the system when I was a young devotee, that every day we would announce the book distribution scores, and whoever was the top book distributor, they would get, you know, the whole of the maha prasadam. And sometimes it would become a little contentious because, you know, there would always be somebody that was better than anybody else, and consistently every day they would distribute more books, so they would always get the maha prasadam. Then the other devotees, they would complain, why is he always getting the maha? But anyway, Prabhupada said that was a good principle, that because we're neophytes, we can't expect to be on the spontaneous platform and do things automatically. So sometimes there has to be pressure. Temple president orders the devotees to go out and distribute books, so they should go. But it has to be done nicely, that's also the point. Anyway, he was also pleased about the opening of a restaurant, but he cautioned him that it should not be seen simply as a place for promoting vegetarianism. We should not waste time encouraging vegetarianism as opposed to meat eating. We want to encourage prasadam taking, and that is automatically vegetarian. So, now there was one very interesting letter that Prabhupada sent out to all the ISKCON temple presidents after we'd been to this Kumbh Mela festival in 1977. What had happened was that at the Kumbh Mela, we were supposed to have massive prasadam distribution. But when we got there, then Guru Das and Bhagwat Das, who were in charge, they had made the mistake of thinking that when they got to Allahabad, then during the festival, every day, they would be able to go and buy all the grains, you know, the rice and the dal and all the rest of it, and the sabjis, and then organize the prasadam distribution on a daily basis like that. So they were thinking, you know, because on any one day at the Kumbh Mela, there was at least 3 or 4 million people. And during the course of the month, at least 25 million people go through that mela. It's huge. On the main bathing days, there's at least 4 or 5 million people that come down to the riverside and bathe in the Ganges. It's an unbelievable sight. There's so much going on, you can't take it all in. So there are these huge camps. All the different groups are there. And we were supposed to, you know, distribute prasadam for thousands of people every day. So when we got there, then they realized that they'd made a mistake, because there's so many millions of people in Allahabad that there's nothing you can buy. Everybody brings their own stuff because they know you can't buy supplies locally because there's too many people. So they blew it. There was no prasadam distribution. They went out, they looked for, you know, grains and dal and sabji. They couldn't buy any. So Prabhupada was very upset with them that there was no prasadam distribution going on. So we left early, actually. There were several other things that weren't right. And Prabhupada had planned to stay for 3 weeks. Then he decided to leave after 4 or 5 days. So then we went by train overnight from Allahabad to Calcutta. So in the middle of the night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada was awake, Rameshwara was the secretary, he was awake. And so Prabhupada dictated a letter that Rameshwara had to send to all the ISKCON temple presidents. So that letter read, "To all ISKCON temple presidents, please accept my blessings. Now you must arrange in every temple there must be sufficient stock of prasadam for distribution. You can keep first class cooks, 2 or 3, and they should always be engaged. Whenever any guest comes, he must get prasadam. This arrangement must be made that the cooks prepare 10 or 20 servings at a time of puris and sabji, and you can add halava and pakoras, and the visitors must be supplied immediately. Whenever a gentleman comes, he must be served. As the 20 servings are being distributed, immediately the cooks prepare another 20 servings and they store it. At the end of the day, if no one comes, our own men will take it, and so there is no loss. You cannot say, it is finished, it is not cooked yet, there is no supply for cooking, etc. This must be enforced rigidly. The temple is managed by Srimati Radharani, Lakshmiji, so why should there be want? Our philosophy is, if anyone comes, let him take prasadam, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. Everything is being supplied by Krishna. Krishna is not poor, so why should we deny them? This should be done at any cost. There is no difficulty, it simply requires nice management. At the end of the day, you may sell or give away. If we believe that Krishna is providing and maintaining everyone, then why should we be misers? This means losing faith in Krishna and thinking that we are the doers and the suppliers. We are confident that Krishna will supply. Let the whole world come. We can feed them. So please do this nicely and begin at once." Hoping this meets you all in good health, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So that was Prabhupada's, that if you don't have prasadam to distribute, if you have some excuse, that means you have actually a lack of faith in Krishna. Oh, we can't afford it, you know, to feed so many people, anybody that comes. Sometimes I hear this as you travel around different temples, They know every temple has a certain number of people that come just to be fed. You know, they'll come, they'll turn up on the Sunday feast at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, whenever the prasadam is being distributed. Not for the kirtan, not for the lecture, only for the prasadam. And they come for years and years. Every temple's got a few of them. And they come, they eat, they go away. That's all they do. And then, you know, they get upset with them. Oh, we should tell these guys not to come, or maybe we should start charging them money, or, you know. No, here Prabhupada is saying Krishna is not poor. Krishna is the supplier. The more people you feed, Krishna will supply for them. And if you don't believe that, you don't have faith in Krishna. Everybody that comes must get prasadam. This is the principle that Prabhupada is saying. Everyone that comes must get prasadam. And that was sent to all the temple presidents in ISKCON. So, a couple of last things. Ekadasi fasting. January the 13th, 1976. Because it was Ekadasi, we skipped breakfast and fasted until noon. But at lunchtime, the devotees inadvertently broke the Ekadasi vow because the cook accidentally put peas into the vegetables. No one noticed it until too late. Fortunately, I arrived late for the lunch because I had been massaging Srila Prabhupada. I was just about to eat when Jayapataka Maharaj shouted for me to stop. Although initially annoyed at being told not to eat, I was relieved when he pointed out that there were peas in the vegetable. Shamefaced, Tamal Krishna Maharaj went to Srila Prabhupada to report what had happened and to find out what should be done. Srila Prabhupada told us, "You are all nonsense." He angrily rebuked us, "Now you have to fast for 3 days." We were all shocked. "Yes, that is the procedure," Prabhupada repeated. Seeing the stunned look on our faces, he relented, but he said that we should observe Ekadasi for the rest of the day and then again fast tomorrow on the Dwadasi. So he was very angry that we'd broken Ekadasi. Then, let's see what have we here. One last thing. Okay, that's it. That's the last one. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm just trying to think. There were a couple of other incidents about to do with fasting. Okay, two more fasting things and then we'll finish. One was when I was with Prabhupada in Sanand in Gujarat at the end of December of 75, and it was a Ekadasi, so I was fasting, and I told Prabhupada, you know, that I was going to fast for half a day because it was a Ekadasi, and Prabhupada said, "Oh, very good." He said, "Actually, he said you can fast even from water if you want to please Lord Krishna." So on the Ekadasi, that's a day when you can please Krishna by fasting. Today is a Ekadasi, so this is a good day to mention that. Another time when I had been kind of fasting, I told this story the other day, but most of you didn't hear it. In 1977, after I left Prabhupada's party, I'd gone back to Australia. In India, with Prabhupada, I caught malaria twice. So I'd taken this medicine, and what it does is it actually doesn't get rid of the malaria, but it kind of suppresses it into your system, but it doesn't actually get rid of the bug. So as soon as I got back to Australia, within a couple of weeks, then immediately the malaria came out again because of the different environment. So I got very, very sick. I couldn't eat. I was put into hospital for about 4 or 5 days in the Tropical Diseases Hospital in Adelaide. And I lost a bit of weight. Then after that, I was reading the Bhagavatam and I saw where Prabhupada mentioned that if one is serious about spiritual life, then he only eats once a day. So I thought, well, okay, I'll try that. So I was, you know, just kind of eating once a day. So anyway, then in May, at the end of May, late May, Prabhupada had been in Rishikesh. He got really, really sick. And they had to rush him back to Vrindavan. And the word went out that all the GBC had to gather in Vrindavan and that Prabhupada was maybe going to leave us. So I was a brand new GBC, and somehow the message didn't get to me for a few days. So when I arrived in Vrindavan, it was on May 29th, and the crisis apparently had, you know, subsided a bit, and Prabhupada was showing some signs of improvement again. So most of the GBCs were already leaving. So I thought, well, I've come all this way now, I may as well, you know, I should stay here for a couple of weeks at least, and just be with Srila Prabhupada again. So one day, I think in early June, we had a shift system, so somebody had to be with Prabhupada 24 hours a day. So it was my turn, and I was with Prabhupada, there was just the two of us. It might have been on that day that I arrived, May 29th or 30th. So Prabhupada was lying on a cot on the roof, and I was sitting next to him. So he looked at me and he said, "So, in Australia you are reducing?" So I looked and I couldn't figure out what Prabhupada was referring to. So I said, "Reducing, Srila Prabhupada?" So he said, "Yes, in Australia you are reducing." Then I realized he was looking at me and saw that I'd lost weight. So I was reducing in weight. So I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, I got sick with malaria, and so I lost a bit of weight, but I'm only eating once a day now." So then Prabhupada looked at me, he was very concerned, and he said, "No," he said, "you know, you should eat. You should eat as much as required." So then I said, "No, well, I read in the Bhagavatam that it says if you're serious about spiritual life, then you only eat once a day." So then he said, "Oh, then it is all right." So he was concerned I was losing weight. He's thinking, you know, he's lost his appetite or something, or you should keep yourself healthy and eat as much as you can. But when I said no in the Bhagavatam, then he said, "Oh, then it's all right." Authorized. So, okay. Oh, that's it. That's the end of the Prasadam segment of Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. Thank you all very much for hearing. What are we going to do tomorrow?
Your suggestion was that it will be the short Bhagavatam lecture, and then questions and answers if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if everybody's happy with that. So tomorrow we'll. Yeah, tomorrow morning. It's been suggested that we just have a general questions and answers, you know, about any topic. So we can have a short Bhagavatam class, and then if everybody wants, we'll have a question and answers session tomorrow morning. Is that okay? I just thought of one last thing. In 1977, again when we were in Vrindavan, during that last period, that last 6 weeks, October, November of 77, Prabhupada commented one day, because, you know, by that time, for about 3 months, he'd only been drinking liquid. He'd not been taking anything to eat. And there was just that period, a couple of days, when Pishima came and he accepted something from her. But one day, he was lying on the bed, and he said, "Now finally," he said, "I have conquered eating." He said, "These four things, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending," he said, "of course, defense, there's no question. And mating, I gave that up long ago. So, and sleeping," he said, "now also I'm not sleeping." So he said, "but this eating," he said, "now finally," he said, "I have conquered eating." I mean, his body was nothing but skin and bones by that time, but that was Prabhupada's take on it, that he said, "now finally," he said, "I've conquered this business of eating." So that shows you how difficult it is to control the tongue. All right, that's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.